This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. You're about to hear an excerpt of a remarkable comedy set by my guest, Tig Notaro, and we have an interview with her. But let me back up a little bit. I didn't know who Tig Notaro was until last May, when she was a guest on the edition of This American Life that was shown live in movie theaters. I saw the show with several of our producers, and we all thought we should invite her on. We decided to wait until she had a new album or was in a new movie or TV show. The event that brought her back to our attention was really bad news. In August, she was diagnosed with breast cancer, both breasts. That's enough to put everything in your life on hold. But right after the diagnosis, she decided to show up for her regular comedy night at the Club Largo in L.A. She threw out her old material and kept things in the moment. Louis C.K., who also performed there that night, tweeted that her set was masterful. Articles were written about it. I wished I could have heard it. And now I have, because it turns out it was recorded. And Louis C.K. has just made it available for purchase on his website. Later, he'll tell us what this set means to him as a comic. So, before we hear my interview with Tig Notaro, here's the opening of her set. Imagine her walking out right after her diagnosis, facing an audience who didn't know about the cancer.
Good evening. Hello. I have cancer. How are you? Hi, how are you? Is everybody having a good time? I have cancer. How are you? It's a good time. Diagnosed with cancer. Feels good. Just diagnosed with cancer. God. Oh my God. It's weird because with humor, the equation is tragedy plus time equals comedy. I am just at tragedy right now. That's just where I am in the equation. Oh, it's fine. Here's what happened. It's very personal. Found a lump. Guys, relax. Everything's fine. I have cancer.
Tig Notaro, welcome to Fresh Air. And first, how are you?
I'm doing great. Almost better than ever.
What's your prognosis now?
My prognosis is great. I had a double mastectomy. They got all the cancer, and it did not spread like they had feared. I spoke with my doctor, who told me the testing came back and I have a 7% recurrence rate. So that's beyond amazing.
That's wonderful. So I'm really happy for you.
Thank you. I am too. I'm thrilled.
So I'm so sorry that this has been such a rough patch of your life, but I'm so grateful that you've managed to make something so remarkable from all the horrors that you're going through. So let's start by talking about this set. If I were in the audience, when you walked out and did this whole, hello, good evening, I have cancer, I don't know that I would have had any idea how to interpret that, whether I would have thought you were serious or whether I would have thought, like, this is some really weird, like, performance art piece. And I keep thinking, like, who are those people who are laughing as they're saying, I have cancer? So how did you get the idea of starting that way?
Well, I originally was picturing myself going out, and I never sit on a stool when I do stand-up. And I was picturing myself being kind of that comedian for the night where I pull up a stool and I say, hey, you know, it's been a rough few months. Bear with me. I'm working on some material that's a bit of a detour from my regular stuff. And then I was taking a shower about an hour and a half before the show. And I was thinking, I can't do that. That's so lame. And I don't want to make excuses for my show before I get started, regardless of what I'm doing on stage. And my brain just popped out with this idea that I walk on stage and say, thank you, I have cancer, thanks for coming. And it just made me laugh so hard just in the shower. And then I was thinking, oh gosh, even though that's funny to me, I was scared of offending people and confusing people and, you know, thinking about people that maybe did have cancer in the audience or had somebody that they loved that had cancer. And then the reality hit me that I have cancer. Like, this is my this is my story. And I just kept thinking about it and picturing it, and it just kept making me laugh so hard. And so I just decided to do it. I was really nervous, though.
So what
but
was,
it seemed to be the way to get in.
What was it like when you walked on stage and you did that whole, good evening, I have cancer, and people laughed? I think other people were just astonished and shocked. But everybody, I think everybody was completely with you, no matter what their reaction was. What were you feeling at that moment?
I was very nervous. I was rattled, and I felt raw, and I felt very vulnerable. Even though I had been diagnosed maybe a week prior to that, it was only maybe the day before the show that I had met with my doctor, who told me that I had stage 2 breast cancer and that the tumor on the left side was invasive, and that because the cancer was not contained, their fear was that it had possibly spread to my lymph nodes, and so they didn't know where the cancer had spread or if it had or how far. Like, they just didn't know. And I was just in a very vulnerable, raw place, and I had no idea what was in front of me.
I don't even know how you were able to get on stage and do this. You had gotten the real lowdown the day before. You must have been in shock and totally horrified.
I was devastated.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was devastated. And I had been working on this. I had done This American Life in May, and Ira Glass, the host, had invited me back and immediately. And so I had pitched an idea about when I got my wisdom teeth removed about 15 years ago. And he said, great, let's do that. And then he called me a couple days later and said, where are we on that piece? And I said, oh, you mean you want me back immediately? And he said, yeah. And I said, oh, to be honest, I am in no place to be talking about my wisdom teeth and some silly story. I feel so just consumed by the hell that my life had become. And he said, well, great, let's talk about that then. And I told him I wanted to talk about that. And he said, great, let's do it. And so I wrote about 10 pages about what was going on. And then I happened to be in New York and met with him, and he read over the pages, and he looked at me and he said, this is so depressing. And I said, yeah, I know, but it's my life. I don't know what to do. And he said, you know, your power is doing this on stage. And if there's a point that you feel that you can do this on stage or find anything funny, then I think you need to do this on stage. And so a part of me was thinking, you know, I just want to get on This American Life again. And then another part of me, I didn't know if I was dying. I didn't know if I was ever going to get on stage again, and I better take this opportunity.
Well, I want to play another excerpt of your set at Largo. And this was recorded in August, just a few days after you were diagnosed with cancer. And it's not just the cancer that you were dealing with, but also a few weeks before the cancer, actually more like maybe 3 months before the cancer diagnosis, you'd gotten pneumonia. And then as a result of that, you got an infection called C. diff, short for C. difficile, which is a kind of deadly bacterial infection that wreaks havoc with your whole digestive system. And then your relationship with your girlfriend fell apart. So you had all these things, terrible things happening to you. At the same time, your career was actually going very well at that point. So at this point in your set, in which you're talking about all these things that have happened to you, you've been talking about the good and the bad happening at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
and how this is changing you.
Again, just please bear with me. It's so hard because, like, right now in my life, I don't feel like when I have a show, I don't feel like, oh, I want to go talk about how funny it is that a bee was taking the 405 freeway. Like all the jokes that I've written, I just am like, I can't even bring myself to talk about it. Because, and here, just everyone relax, my mother just died. Should I leave? My mother just died, but tragically, too. She was 65, she tripped, hit her head, and died. A week after I got out of the hospital. I can't believe you're taking this so hard. You didn't know her. You didn't know her. I'm doing okay. What happened was, after we buried her in our hometown in Mississippi, we drove back to Texas, and I was checking the mail, and the hospital sent my mother a questionnaire to see how her stay at the hospital went. Not great. Did not go great.
That's Tig Notaro, and this set was recorded and is being released and has been released exclusively on Louis C.K.'s website. So, Tig, you know, when I was listening to this set for the first time, I really didn't know how to react. And I was, like, laughing and then thinking, like, this is not really funny. This is really tragic. It's horrible. I shouldn't be laughing. But then I was thinking, no, but she's saying it. What she's saying isn't funny, but the way she's saying it is very funny. And she's a comic. She'd probably prefer it if I laugh. It's probably better if I laugh. And I was so almost distracted having this internal debate with myself about whether it was appropriate. I was listening alone in my car, you know, and laughing and having this debate with myself. And then I'm listening to the audience respond on this recording. And some people are laughing and some people are shushing the people who are laughing. And then you also hear, you can kind of like hear the silence of some people.
Yeah.
Like what response made you feel best during, as you know, as the set kept going and people are kind of getting more and more attuned to where you're heading, and some people are laughing and some people are shushing them and some people are just astonished?
Yeah, it was a lot to take in. You know, I feel like the 300 people that were in that audience that night were the exact perfect people that should have been there. They were just so tremendous. And you know, like you were saying, there's just so many different reactions. There was laughing and silence, and it was the first time in my career where I've looked in the audience and seen people crying. It was a very intense experience, and there was a point where I wasn't sure if things had gotten too dark, and I had considered and suggested that maybe I just call it a night, and this guy, you know, he spoke up, absolutely not, and the crowd just burst into this supportive, I don't even know, it was so emotional, I almost started crying.
Really?
It was, and I just thought, oh, please, don't cry. Just, you can't walk out here and tell them all this stuff and then start crying on stage. You know, I just would have felt so defeated. But I wanted to feel and seem strong, and I had to pull myself together before I spoke again.
Was it a hard decision to make about whether to include your mother's death within this set?
No, it was not. My mother was a very, very funny, outrageous, outspoken person, and she never edited me. her whole thing in my life was, if anybody had a problem with me, tell them to go to hell. She told me that just as a little kid through my whole life. I actually spoke about that at her funeral.
My guest is comic Tig Notaro. We're talking about the set she performed at the club Largo in L.A. right after she was diagnosed with cancer in each breast. Comic Louis C.K. also performed there that night. He's released a recording of her set on his website. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is comic Tig Notaro, and we're talking about a set that she performed at a theater called Largo in L.A. This was in August, and it was right after she was diagnosed with breast cancer in each of her breasts. And the set that she did is all about that, but it's also about these other horrible things that happened to her within 4 months. There was first pneumonia, and then as a consequence of that, C. difficile, which is a really horrible bacterial infection that is very difficult to get rid of in your digestive tract. I mean, so bad some people die from it. And then she and her girlfriend broke up. Then her mother died. And then it was on top of all that that she was diagnosed with the cancer. So at this part in your set, you're talking about how you were trying to, like, one night you were just so depressed, you were trying to drown your troubles with food, but the problem was, because of still recovering from the C. diff, there's very little that you could eat. So, like, you were binging on Triscuits because they're basically like wheat flour and water. And so this is
it's that rock bottom.
Yes, rock bottom, absolutely. So this is that part of the set.
I was trying to drown my emotions in something. That's all I could do. Like, that's it. I'm going to the store and I'm buying Triscuits. It's like through all of this, like getting diagnosed, like, oh, I'll call my girlfriend. Oh, we broke up. Oh, I'll call my mother. Oh, my mother died. Oh, I'll go buy some food. Oh, I can't eat anything. Guys, who here is just wishing I would tell bees going down the 405? I just can't. I'm sorry. But you know what's nice about all of this? Is that you can always rest assured that God never gives you more than you can handle. Never. Never. When you've had it, God goes, all right, that's it. I just keep picturing God going, you know what? I think she can take a little more. And then the angels are standing back going, God, what are you doing? You are out of your mind. And God was like, no, no, no. I really think she can handle this. But why, God? Like, why? Why? No, I just, you know, just trust me on this. She can handle this. God is insane. If there at all.
And that's Tig Notaro from her set recorded at Largo in L.A. in August. And that set is now available exclusively on Louis C.K.'s website. Did finding comedy within the tragedy help you get through it? Or did it at least make you feel like, well, I'm good professionally. Like, I know how to make this work on stage. I'm good at that. What did you get from the performance?
I got so many different things on so many different levels at so many different times. It was just the bursting at the seams cathartic moment on stage of just being held up by this sold out theater. And then I went to bed that night. I'm not on Twitter and I don't follow blogs, and so I emailed Ira saying, oh, I think I might have gotten something that maybe you could use. And I went to bed, and I woke up the next day and my phone, when I turned it on, just kept beeping, just so many voicemails and text messages, and I didn't understand how the whole world knew I had cancer. I was so confused, you know, and then to go from the 300 people that night to the world knew, and I've just been lifted and carried and supported, and I have amazing friends and family. And my first thought when I was diagnosed was, oh, I have to keep this a secret. I don't want to lose work. And then that just blew the roof off of that.
Good point.
Yeah, there was no, it was just so funny because I was talking to my manager just days before, like, how are we going to keep this a secret? You know, I'm going to be going through chemo. I'll be bald, 4 pounds. You know, this is clearly something's going to be suspicious. So next thing I know, everybody's like, oh, everybody knew I had cancer.
Tig Notaro will be back in the second half of the show. A recording of her comedy set that we've been talking about was released by comic Louis C.K. on his website. We'll hear from him later. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with comic Tig Notaro. We're talking about the now-famous set she performed last August at the Club Largo in L.A., just after she was diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer. She had tumors in both breasts. She's healing now from her double mastectomy, and the doctors say she has only a 7% chance of recurrence. Let's talk about your earlier life and how you got into all of this in the first place. You didn't set out to be a comic. I don't think you did anyways, because professionally, first you were, I think, trying to be a musician and then ended up promoting bands. Mm-hmm. Just tell us a little bit about your music, your early music life.
Well, I got my first guitar when I was 9 because I wanted to be the fifth Beatle, even though they had already broken up and John Lennon died that year. I was obsessed with music, and I started playing drums when I was 20 or so. And yeah, I kind of had this fantasy where I would have loved to have been in a band. But whenever I performed and played guitar in front of anybody, whether it was one-on-one or on stage, the couple of times that I tried to, my hand would shake so tremendously that I could not pull it off. So I thought maybe being in music business, just being around music, would be my thing. And when I was doing it, I thought, this is perfect. I found my thing. I'm so happy doing this. But I had always, my whole life, followed stand-up and comedy, and that was my, if I could do anything. But I just didn't understand how people became comedians. I thought it was just something you were born. Like I really couldn't understand how Richard Pryor or Paula Poundstone became stand-up comedians. But that was truly what I wanted.
So how did you take the first step?
Well, I grew up with a couple of friends, my friends Beth and Leslie, Leslie and I just went wherever Beth went because Beth was going to school and graduate school and had a clear direction in life. So Leslie and I just would move wherever Beth got into colleges, and we just didn't know where to go or what to do, so we followed Beth.
And you were flexible since you dropped out of high school.
Yeah. I failed 3 grades and dropped out of high school, and I just didn't have anything going on, really. So I was like, oh, Beth wants to move to L.A. to be a producer. That's fine. There's music out there. So, yeah, we all packed up and went to L.A. to follow Beth's dreams. And then when we got there, I opened the LA Weekly and I saw all of the opportunity to do stand up. You could do open mics in coffee shops, laundromats, comedy clubs. I just couldn't believe. We had just been living in Denver, and there were only at the time a couple of outside rooms aside from the actual comedy club there. So when people are surprised that I started stand-up in Los Angeles, they think it's so intimidating, whereas I thought it was intimidating to start in Denver where there was such fewer opportunities. In L.A., you could fly under the radar in all these just horrible places to work out material.
So what did it feel like the first time you got a laugh?
I wasn't expecting it. It's so interesting. I didn't account for laughter, which seems odd, but I had been talking to myself for so long at my apartment. I was so focused on getting all of my material down, and when I got on stage, at the coffee shop and people laughed, I remember being taken aback. I was like, oh, oh, that's right. That's what I was telling you this for, was for the laughter. But I just didn't even factor it in at all. But it was so exhilarating.
So much so that
the second night I did stand up, I thought, because the first night went so well, I was like, oh, this is so easy. So I went and I competed in a stand up competition. And I got booed off the stage and walked off stage early. And I was like, what am I doing?
And how come you weren't so discouraged that you never went back on stage again?
It's that thing of comedy. It's that roller coaster that just sucks you in. It's kind of like gambling, I guess. You hit big one time and then you bottom out and then you're like, oh, I can hit big again. And so that just kind of keeps you going. Luckily, I'm not a gambler or drinker, or, you know, I get my fix with comedy.
So one of the things you talked about in your set in August, uh-huh. in which you talked about, you know, having cancer, first time you talked about it in public, was that you and your girlfriend had recently split up, and like, what are you going to do now? Like, how do you, you know, like, who's going to be interested now that, like, you're really, you know, you're going to be sick, which actually it looks like you won't really be sick. It looks like you're going to be in great shape. But anyways, I'm thinking, like, you are probably getting so many inquiries. you're probably just, like, swamped with people who want to get to know you.
You know, my life has been so, since March, when I first got a tickle in my throat and wasn't feeling well, to
the thing before the pneumonia, right, yeah.
Yeah, to just getting my bandages off, that was just days ago. Through that whole time, I've been in this crazy capsule. Like, just going out to eat, I feel like I just got released into the world. I feel so free and excited, and everything negative has birthed amazing and positive things and enlightening things for me. And people tend to think, oh, poor Tig, she's alone, and nobody should be concerned for me. All is well. And my mother's death brought my stepfather so far out of his normal comfort zone, and he has become so emotional, and he's reached out to me, and the C. diff is what caused me to realize that I had cancer from checkups from that, and my breakup made me realize so much about myself and who I had been dating and who I actually wanted for myself. And the cancer has just been this just explosive, I'm typically more private, and this is something that is pushing me so far out there in a way that has never been. I have no complaints. My life is tremendously wonderful.
Well, Tig Notaro, thank you so much for talking with us, and congratulations on your great prognosis. It's just wonderful news.
Oh, thank you. I'm so excited, and thanks so much for having me on.
My pleasure. Tig Notaro's comedy set at the Club Largo in L.A. last August is available for purchase on comic Louis C.K.'s website. He was there the night of the show and thought the set was masterful. He'll tell us why after a break. This is Fresh Air.